judgment in the county clerk lien record somewhere that the satisfaction should be recorded with that judgment.
How does County B under the bill where there's a lien filed, how do you know that there's been satisfaction on that judgment?
It'd be the responsibility of the party to record that satisfaction.
In County B as
in
well?
In County B, as, yes.
Okay. In the judgment docket?
In the county clerk lien record in what? County B.
How come not the circuit court judgment docket?
This section 9 is intended to deal with
only with this interim period.
This interim period between 83 and 85, supposedly our effective date in 85. So during that period, you will have had judgments in County B, which will be recorded in the county clerk lien record, to cover for satisfactions of those judgments that have been put in the county clerk lien record. Section 9 is intended to cover that interim period, and that what it provides is that the satisfaction follows the judgment. If you have a judgment that's in a judgment docket, then the satisfaction should be filed in the judgment docket. If you have a judgment that's recorded in the county clerk lien record somewhere, the satisfaction should be recorded correspondingly in the county clerk lien record. That closes the matter.
Oh, okay. Okay.
The case.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have a short quiz on that.
Yeah.
Pop quiz.
We have Mr. Cosgrove from the Oregon State Bar, debtor creditor section, who has an amendment.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Paul Cosgrove. My address is 2900 Bristol State Tower in Portland, and I'm here on behalf of the debtor creditor section of the Oregon State Bar, which I believe I'm stating accurately is one of the largest sections of the Oregon State Bar, and made up of attorneys who practice in this field, both representing debtors and creditors. We have proposed amendments to HB 2096, which address a related complementary issue and do not in any way detract from the purposes of the bill as discussed by Mr. Linden and Ms. Abrams. The amendments that we are proposing deal with a sort of even more specialized issue, and I'll try to read from the description, but I think also a little background might be helpful. Current Oregon law allows federal court judgments to be transcribed to the circuit courts in this state for the purpose of obtaining a lien on real property, a similar kind of process to transcribing from one Oregon circuit court to another Oregon circuit court. In fact, that process, which is now addressed in ORS 18380 and 390, is required by federal law. Federal law requires that states give federal judgments the same kinds of effect as the states give their own judgments. The process that we have proposed would modify that procedure for a couple of reasons. First, to clarify it, in the study of this section, or these two sections, a special committee of the debtor creditor section, working with federal court clerks and state court clerks and attorneys who practice in this area, believe that some of the language, again, is inconsistent and contradictory, particularly the language in 18380. We would propose repealing that section, reincorporating its substantive provisions into a new section which would replace 18390, and at the same time change the language to be consistent with what the Commission on Judicial Branch is suggesting, clarifying docketing is docketing and those kinds of issues. This afternoon, in discussions with Ms. Abrams, we found that in fact, in one place, our amendment fails to make the change to the new desired statutory language, and I would propose discussing briefly what that is as I finish my testimony, and then I'd be happy to provide the committee with revised amendments which make those additional clarifications. Secondly, we would be creating a procedure that expands the authority of the state court once it receives the transcript of a federal court judgment. And the procedure would allow the state court, once this transcript had been filed from a federal court, thereafter clearly to have the authority to issue writs of execution, writs of garnishment, transcripts to other circuit courts in Oregon for the purpose of obtaining lien on real property located in those counties, and scheduling judgment debtors exam. The enforcement proceedings that typically would be provided to a judgment creditor whose judgment was originally entered in the circuit court in that county. Third, we would suggest even a further clarification of the issue of satisfaction of judgments, and make explicit that the judgment creditor is required to satisfy a judgment in the records of every court in which it's ever been transcribed, in the records of any court in which it was originally entered, and also with some additional language that we would propose today in addition to the printed amendment you have before you, also clarify that in for those judgments who have made it into county clerk lien records in the interim between 1983 and 1985, that duty would be also on the judgment creditor to file satisfaction in that location. In other words, hopefully make it very clear that once a judgment is satisfied, the judgment creditor must record, file, docket as appropriate in any court, in any state, in any system, or in any county, that satisfaction. We hope that this amendment will be favorably viewed by the subcommittee. It has been produced and provided to both the Commission of the Judicial Branch and the Judicial Department, and I believe the Judicial Department would like to have a few more days, as they have looked at the specific language only recently, to provide their comments to it. We consider it a non-controversial and statute improvement kind of an amendment, which is consistent in tone and with the effects of HB 2096. With those amendments, the debtor creditor section of the bar would support 2096. I would also suggest that the debtor creditor section of the bar, although it hasn't taken official position on this question, would also support the general thrust of 2096, but hopes that its amendments improve the bill and make some additional related important changes. I'd be happy to answer questions. Oh, if I may, the written amendments that we have provided and are attached to my testimony, we'd suggest that on page one of the amendments, that on the third small paragraph after where it says in line eight, that additional amendment be added to say in line nine, after quote docketed end quote, delete quote or end quote, and insert quote, and in every county in which transcript thereof has been, end quote. Now that, when you read that amendment in the context of the bill, I think it specifies even more clearly the requirement for satisfaction in all locations in which a judgment has ever been transcribed in the court.
As you a second, provide that to us in writing.
We certainly will, and I will submit it to the committee hopefully tomorrow.
Thank you.
There is a related change on page two of our amendments. Unfortunately, as we were replacing OS 318.390 with our new section, the end of that section was not modified, and so we neglected to make changes, like, for example, on the first line of subsection 2, it should read from the time of docketing, not entry. In other words, we forgot to make the new language changes, and we will be proposing an amendment that clarifies that as well.
Now, these next amendments below, it's where it says on page 5 after line 25, is that part of your amendments as well?
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, we'd be repealing ORS 18380, which we believe has some inconsistent, confusing language. It dates from many, many years ago, many sessions ago, and we would be reincorporating those substantive provisions above in our new 18390.
Is this a bill some other place in the
process? No, it is not.
Process?
No, it is not. Because the issue was so related to the issues presented by HB 2096, instead of introducing specific legislation with this issue, we suggested that we would suggest that the legislature review those amendments to 2096.
Okay. And I guess I kind of sort of had my states' rights question back over here on your testimony, and that is, why should we pay for the cost of the federal court?
The current procedure, and it's a matter of federal law, requires, and it's in 28 U.S.C. 1962, in the Judicial Code of the United States Courts, requires as a matter of supremacy that states give the same effect to federal court judgments as they do to their own judgments. The current provisions in ORS 18380 and 390 are recognition of that requirement in that they allow a transcription process from federal court down to state court. And I think that's consistent with the intent of that federal legislation. It also is an efficiency in the sense that in many cases litigants in Oregon must repair to the federal court in order to vindicate their rights. There are many, of course, cases which can be filed both in state court and federal court. But some cases are exclusively within the jurisdiction of the federal court, and our citizens must go to federal court in order to litigate those issues. It allows bringing those proceedings back into state court for the purposes of enforcement. What we do by this bill is expand from the current ability to transcribe for the sole purpose of obtaining a lien on real property, which is the current law, to transcribe for that purpose and also for enforcement purposes. We think it would be more efficient, both for the litigants. We're not talking, I should point out, about high volume of cases. The number of filings in the federal court in this state are only 2,000 a year on the civil side. And of course, many of those are satisfied well before judgment. And many of them would not be transcribed down to Oregon courts. It is not an issue in which a great number of people will be affected. However, we believe it's an issue that makes the Oregon state statutes more consistent with the intent of the federal law that now controls us, and also provides an important benefit to litigants who are in those few cases in which it would be beneficial. Federal courts also, strangely enough, do not have post-judgment procedures themselves. Federal law says they must follow state law. Federal courts are not trained in state law procedures. Our court clerks and our county sheriffs are far more familiar with Oregon state law than federal court clerks and federal marshals are. So they are required to follow state procedures, and it's a very difficult process to have execution issued out of the federal court because of that. They have not been trained, as our county clerks are, very ably by the judicial department, and as our county sheriffs are by their own organization. Different clerks in different districts, federal clerks I'm now talking about, have to follow different state laws, and so there's a lot of inconsistency and a lot of problems in obtaining enforcement of the federal court judgment. We believe it'd be efficient, helpful, not burdensome to the state courts to bring those few judgments down to the state court, where the state court.
Let me ask you procedures. Is there a system? I mean, is there a are there situations where you're going to get a judgment in that's going to where there's going to be a lien on property outside of Oregon?
Through a federal court judgment.
Yeah.
You'd have to, if you get a lien on that property outside of Oregon with a federal court judgment, you'd have to use whatever transcription procedures in that state's law to get it into a state court. Federal court judgments are not automatically liens on real property anywhere. 28 U.S.C. section 1962 says there has to be some procedure in each state to allow federal court judgments to come down into state courts, but it does vary state to state. The procedure we're proposing is almost identical to the procedure that's used in the state of New York, and there are variations all over the country. Many legislatures have not yet addressed this issue.
Let me just ask you a third question, and that's on page 2. What kind of penalty is there if the creditor doesn't fulfill his or her responsibility in terms of going to the appropriate places, counties, I guess, and showing that there is the judgment has been satisfied?
Well, first, if a creditor attempts to execute on a judgment which has been satisfied, it is a tort of wrongful execution. And a judgment debtor who would be harmed in that way would have the ability to bring suit both to stay the execution and for damages caused by any execution. I think the change that the Supreme Court has made in terms of its policy for not charging for satisfactions may help resolve these problems, because most judgment creditors wish to have the court records consistent with their own records on terms of where the judgment is and how much of it has been paid. Other than the tort of wrongful execution, however, I'm not aware of a specific remedy to a judgment debtor to get rid of, for damages caused by such a lien when the satisfaction is not filed. However, there are remedies for a judgment debtor to rid themselves of the lien. There are remedies in Chapter 18 to remove a judgment lien from a homestead, which are already established in Oregon law. They're not tied into, unfortunately, the lien that might be created by a circuit court lien record, so we'd be in support of moving those back into the circuit court where the remedies to the judgment debtor exist. But there are those remedies. They're not for damages, but they are remedies to remove the lien. This is a practical matter that very often comes up when a piece of property is sold and the title company brings up an issue. Mm-hmm. If a satisfaction has been filed in County B, the title company, on behalf of the parties, will search back to see what the status of the judgment is in County A. And if they find a satisfaction as a condition of the sale, they will require satisfaction to be made in the records of County B. I think very often it's a neglect and oversight, not an intentional problem, and it's picked up in that means.
Thank you. Further questions? Thank you very much for coming down this afternoon. Are there any other individuals who want to testify on House Bill 2096? Okay, we'll close the hearing on 2096 and finish our afternoon with House Bill 2215. And Ms. Stockdale is here. Oh, she's here. I'm going to kind of hold off and kind of gather our papers here for a few minutes. We have a statement from Ms. Stockdale that they want to kind of review. It's only four pages.
I stand. Sound all right to you?
For the purpose you're using it, yes.
Nancy, I think I could have lots of charges made, but I still would totally understand this. Unfortunately, in my real estate license, I studied lien law. You know, you spend a lot of time studying lien. At least I know the dirt.
I want to know who really cooked up Senate Bill 773.
Wasn't that a big bill?
Yeah, it's about, it's real big. Yeah.
Wasn't that a major bill, Senate Bill 773? That was a big bill, wasn't it?
We can take a short recess, but please stay in the room. Home confinement, all right? Good afternoon, Ms. Stockdale. Could you join us on House Bill 2215?
Yeah, thank you for giving us another 5-minute break. That was nice.
My pleasure.
Welcome back to the legislature, Ms. Stockdale. A veteran of the Legislative Council office.
It's been over 5 years now. Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, for the record, I'm Elizabeth Stockdale, Assistant Attorney General in the Tax Section of the Department of Justice. And I bring to you today the Department of Justice's part in trying to clean up some of the loose ends and problems that were created by Senate Bill 773 in the 1973 session. As Paula Abrams explained to you when she was discussing House Bill 2096, the county clerk lien record was created in order to take away from the courts and place into the county clerk's responsibility for having public record created of state agency tax warrants and orders that assessed money due for civil penalties. because they were creating problems for the courts when the court system was created as a statewide system. Maybe I could add just a little tiny bit more background as to why some of these problems are here that we're trying to resolve. Senate Bill 773 was first conceived of in March or April of the 1983 legislative session, and it went through several hearings with the Senate Judiciary Committee, and everything looked fine. And then 3 or 4 days before the session ended, someone from the County Clerks Association came in and said, wait a minute, we don't want a docketing bill, we want a recording bill. And they had all these pages of amendments that changed docket to record everywhere where they thought it was appropriate. And we didn't have a lot of time to get the bill passed, and we had to have somewhere to put these warrants and orders. So we vowed to the Senate Judiciary Committee that if there were any problems, we'd clean them up in the next session. And as a matter of fact, House Revenue was the only committee that was still operating when that bill went through the House. It was that late in the session. Well, I don't know if that, I know that doesn't excuse the mistakes, but at least you can understand why some of the errors are where they are. House Bill 2215 focuses on the issue from the state agency side. Many state agencies are authorized to issue warrants to collect taxes. The Department of Revenue was probably the most prominent one, but the Employment Division has the authority to issue warrants to collect unemployment tax, employment comp tax. PUC has the ability to issue warrants to collect late mile tax, and then a whole host of state agencies that have regulatory authority have the power to assess civil penalties by issuing orders. All of these documents, once they become final, in order to create a lien against property, have to be put in a public record, and the county clerk lien record was created for that purpose. The genesis of this bill, I think, was a conversation between Linda Zuckerman and myself when she came up to me and she said, do you know anything about this county clerk lien record bill? And I admitted that I did, and she said the courts were having some difficulties with it, and I said, well, there were still some loose ends on the state agency side, and the problems that that are addressed in the bill from the state agency side involve the status primarily of the warrants and orders. Until 1983, most warrant and order provisions in the statutes provided that a warrant, when it was issued, had the status of a judgment. And the same thing with the civil penalty orders. They were given the status of a judgment, or they had the same effect as a judgment, or words to that effect in the statutes. And they were to be docketed, and then the agency could execute upon them. But the piggybacking that was done by just saying, do it like a judgment, has created problems for the agencies, because warrants and orders aren't like judgments. They don't come out of a court. They come from an agency. They can be directed to anybody in the state. The agency is not limited to somebody who lives in a particular county. And so the whole orientation of the agency with the person who owes the funds is very different from a court to a judgment debtor.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bellamy.
Elizabeth, can you tell me what a warrant and an order is?
A warrant is a state agency document that is issued when taxes are due from a person and they have not been voluntarily paid. The best example I can give you is a warrant for delinquent income taxes, where a person files a return and says, I owe so much in taxes, but doesn't remit the amount with them. And the agency then would try voluntary collection efforts, calling them or writing and saying, did remit. But if it gets down to the point where they are delinquent and the person is not paying them voluntarily, the agency is empowered to issue a warrant. And that warrant is directed to the sheriff, under the way the statutes are currently written, to levy and execute against their property in order to collect those delinquent taxes. Another attribute that a warrant has for tax collection purposes is that the agency can issue a notice of garnishment to any person who owes money to that taxpayer who hasn't paid their taxes. And this is under ORS 29375, which is amended in this bill. The administrative garnishment provision then goes into effect, and if it's a bank that has a bank account, for example, or an employer who pays wages to the taxpayer, then is directed to pay over a portion of that to the agency until the tax debt is satisfied. So that's, and the Employment Division has employment compensation taxes that it collects, has the same power. Same thing with Public Utility Commissioner's Office for weight mile tax. And so that's what a warrant is. Then an order that, kinds of orders that we're concerned with in the bill are orders issued by state agencies directed to individuals assessing a civil penalty against the individual for violating a statute for which they're generally in the regulatory agencies or licensing agencies. If a licensing board licenses a doctor, an optometrist, or somebody, and they violate one of the rules that's promulgated by the agency or one of the statutes that the agency is responsible to administer, the statutes may provide that instead of some kind of criminal prosecution, the agency can determine that this person should be fined. And after a hearing, the agency issues an order that says you are being fined because you violated this statute or this rule, and the amount of your fine is X. If the person doesn't voluntarily pay the fine, then the agency can proceed on the order in the same manner as if they had a judgment against the person for the amount of fine. The features of the bill are, one, to attempt to clarify the status of agency orders and warrants and to give them some kind of separate identity from judgments. Those provisions are contained in sections 1 through 4 of the bill. Basically, they provide that a warrant does have the same force and effect as if it were a judgment. And we tried to make clear in the draft that an agency doesn't have to go to court and then get a judgment on the basis of the warrant or the order. It's the same as if they had a judgment. It's just got a different name on it. The recording of the order or warrant in the county clerk lien record has the same effect as the docketing of a judgment. It creates a lien for the amount of the outstanding tax or civil penalty against any property of that debtor that's located in that county. And the order or warrant can be recorded in any county in which the person has property. The bill would require that a clerk of a court in a county in which the order or warrant has been recorded must issue a writ of garnishment or a writ of execution on presentation of a certified copy of that recorded order or warrant. The bill provides that an order or warrant that is issued by a state agency for a debt owed to the state doesn't expire until it's satisfied or until it's released by the agency. Under current law, there are no provisions, to my knowledge, for agencies to just write off debts. They have to continue to attempt to collect them. And in fact, there's a procedure whereby most state agencies, if they determine that they are unable to collect the debt, must refer it, with the approval of the Secretary of State, to the Department of Revenue. And the department is to continue to see if the person who is the debtor has any assets or any funds that can be reached to satisfy the debt to the state.
Which section is that?
Those sections of the statutes are in Chapter 293. One section in that group is amended in the bill, 293-250, which is Section 5 of the bill. Or if you look at ORS 293-245, 240, 245, 250, I think, is the area where the Secretary of State is to prescribe a charge-off provision for the state agencies, and then they ultimately end up in the Department of Revenue.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bellamy.
Elizabeth, you're indicating you haven't changed that?
No, we have not changed that charge-off provision. What we're trying to do in the bill is to make it a little easier for agencies to collect amounts that are owing, so we don't have so many that wind up kind of in a holding pond, just sitting, not ever being charged off, but not ever being collected either.
You've
when I lost you?
Yes.
Okay, and maybe I can go back. Mr. Chairman, there's a collections unit that was created in the Oregon Department of Revenue. And part of its responsibility is to assist other agencies in collecting amounts that are due and owing to them that aren't voluntarily paid. And the state agency can assign to the Department of Revenue, like as a collection agency, basically, those debts that are liquidated. It's determined the amount of the debt. The person who owes the money has had their opportunity to appeal the determination of how much they owe or the fact that they owe it. And these are then assigned to the Department of Revenue. The department has a professional collection staff that uses many ways of obtaining collections. They set up payment programs that they will contact the person who owes the money to try and get payment to be made. There is a provision also in the statutes that if an agency assigns a debt and that individual has a refund coming, say an income tax refund, that the Department of Revenue is to notify the state agency that has assigned the debt that this person does have a refund and should it be set off against the debt that they owe the state. And so that is a tool that the Department of Revenue uses on behalf of state agencies. One thing that the department cannot do right now is use garnishment or levy and execution without going through a court.